This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Blue Monday podcast. We have been a podcast since 2015, and on one, two, three, four occasions now, we have seen a manager sacked by our football team. Now, David Diamond, I once went, because this is the way you hang, I once went to corporate and there was a quiz, and you were, and this was probably 20 years ago, you were able to name all the Ipswich managers. Ipswich only had, like, I don't know, 11 managers in 100 years or something.
That was. It's funny you should say that, because I was thinking earlier, so in the first 20 years of me being a supporter, i.e. actually physically going to watch Ipswich, I could only count three. Okay, there might have been a slight caretaker. I could only count three, which was Sir Bob, Bobby Ferguson and John Duncan, and that was it until John Lyle came in, what, 1989?
But then...
So, yeah. Things have changed.
Even then Burley's going to be there for like 6 or 7 years.
Burley's going to be there after quite a while. So, yeah, it's...
there's 18 managers now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just... It's up there now, isn't it? We're getting... we're getting through them. Starting to get through them, aren't we?
You may as well call us Watford, Craig.
That's working for them, so why not? Let's give it a shot, shall we?
They're in the Premier League. Look, as you can imagine today, there's no script. There's one story in town. Ipswich Town have sacked Paul Cook after 9 months in charge. Yes, this has been COVID scheduled, so 9 months does actually take in more games than a normal 9 months. But 9 months is not a George Burley reign or a Bobby Robson reign, let's just say. So we're reacting to this news. And we've got to say big thank you to Craig, who joined Richard and manned up. I was just saying to the... I'm not allowed to say manned up in 2021, am I?
No, stepped canceled.
Up. Cancelled. Done. Get him out. Stepped up last night. Do you know what, Dave? I walked the dog. I got drenched. I pulled my phone out of my pocket and I'm like, no.
Are you serious?
I was out
with some friends. We're out with a group of friends having a sort of Christmas meal at Westerfield Swan, and my phone was just buzzing, and my wife is a bit eggy if I start looking at my phone. And so I was sort of like this, and I suddenly was going, shit! She said, what's happened?
And I said, have to do what Craig did. You have to either go all in or do what I did, where it was just like, there was a split decision to make. Yeah. I looked at my missus and my four-month babe, and it was like, Craig... I can't do it.
It was a typical understatement from my other half. So I looked at my phone and went, shit. She said, oh no, what's happened? Is it Jordan? Is it Kieran? What's happened? I know Paul Cook's been sacked. And it was a general apathy on her face. It was almost that, you know.
Craig, how was the stream last night? Was there a overarching, underlying mood, a type of comment you were getting? Was there surprise? Was there shock? How was it?
Yeah, I think it was mainly shock. Everyone was just sort of in a state of not disbelief, because you know, it's, nothing's unbelievable, but just the fact that it just came out of nowhere, really, hadn't it? You know, people were sitting a bit of a grumps about a pretty drab FA Cup performance, and that was sort of, that was it. Everyone's just now looking forward to Charlton.
I mean, in a strange way, he'd almost set himself up for it, which unsurprisingly he wouldn't. You know, this time last week, or just prior to the Crewe game last week, you know, you look at the fixtures and the three games coming up, and he almost came up and said, well, there's three games almost we're going to win. We'll be up, you know, get these wins under our belt, and we're, you know, we off and running. And obviously that comes off the back of a fairly unconvincing performance against Crewe. Well, we all know what happened against against Arsenal under-23s. And then, obviously, yesterday's far, again, another far from convincing performance. So, yeah, it was... I'm not saying he backed himself into a corner, but...
Yeah. Just quickly, boys, I've forgotten. There's been a lot going on. Can you just raise your hand if you were at both the Arsenal game and the Barrow game? So you were at both of them, Craig and Joe. Dave, you were at the Arsenal game, but
No, I was at neither.
Oh, you were at neither? Oh, there we go. Hey, same here. I'm in Bedfordshire with a four-month-old baby.
I'm in Ipswich.
You weren't alone in not going yesterday.
To be fair, I know. So I was Wednesday. To be, I did have an excuse. I was out Wednesday. Yesterday, I just didn't go.
Joe, what happened yesterday before we get into the Paul Cookisms?
Just same as it has been for the last few at home, really. Just a very, very dull game, wasn't it? There was very little goal mouth action. I thought the first half was especially poor. There was nothing from either side there. They sort of kept us at arm's length. We weren't really able to do anything with it. Made the change that a lot of people have been calling out for at half-time, putting Joe Piggott up front with Macaulay Bonn. And the second half was better, but it didn't have a particularly high bar to clear. The second half was better, but still, Piggott hit the post very early on in the first couple of minutes of the half. And I think the sort of a header, Cameron Humphreys managed to get across his man, but it deflected onto the bar right in the very, very last minute. But it was just a dull, drab game where we created very little against as their record shows, a poor side, a sort of bottom-end League 2 side. And at Portman Road this year, we've seen us lose to Newport in League 2. We've seen us lose to West Ham under-21s, Arsenal under-21s. We've drawn with Colchester, we've drawn with Oldham, we've drawn with Barrow. And these are games we should just be putting these teams away, whether it's a changed team or not, really. And it's hard to know the sort of machinations of what was going on with the decision, because I can't imagine that the 0-0 at Barrow was the straw that broke the camel's backs, to say. But I'd friends sitting in the West Stand or the Magnus Stand, and they said that there was a fair bit of abuse aimed at the director's box at the end of the game towards sort of where Ashton was sitting. But that's not from me. That's just what someone's told me. So, but the wheels must have been in motion for this already. You see Paul Cook's interview at the end of the game, and he's sort of gone down swinging a little bit with it.
I got the impression it was "see me in the office at the end of the day" type thing that he knew. Craig, does that line up with your assessment of Barrow then yesterday?
Yeah, it was poor. You know, we've said it half a dozen times in the last half a dozen matches. It was just slow, ponderous. It wasn't until the second half where we put two up front and we did go a little bit more direct. It just went to show, you know, like Lambert was guilty of this, wasn't he? Just trying to be too bloody clever in League One. You don't need to be intricate and silky smooth in League One. You just get people in and around the box and get the ball up to them and see what happens. You know, because I thought Piggott played well when he came on. He was causing problems. He certainly, you know, the first half there, Skipper had his pipe and slippers on. We didn't in the second half. He spent most of it on the floor getting back up after Piggott had knocked him over, sort of thing. So I think it just goes to show that, you know, if you do get more people in the action areas, if you like, you can cause problems. But you know, they obviously haven't ever been coached to play 4-4-2. Is it? That's the issue, is that you know, people saying, well, everyone, you know, oh, you've got your wish now, everyone, you've got two up front. Well, yeah, but they've probably never even spoken about it on the training field for the last 6 months, let alone, you know, practiced it or been coached it.
And it's when you look at when Matt Gill came in charge for those three or four games last year, and yeah, the Acton performance wasn't great, but we sort of played four games, and we drew with Oxford and then won the other three against the teams in the top six or seven of the league. And all we did was put Norwood and Parrott up front and go direct into them, didn't we? That's the only thing that we really changed. That's what you need to do if you want to get out of this division. Yeah. If you are just trying to get out of it purely rather than opposed to...
I don't see your faces anymore on the screen. I just see Neil Harris's face on the screen now. as you're talking. That's all I'm seeing there. David, have you got anything to add on yesterday before we talk?
No, I mean, not really. It's the small margins, isn't it? It's a good effort from, you know, Pigger. He's only just come on, hasn't he? I mean, I've seen the highlights, and he turns. Really good strike. That goes in the bottom corner. And not saying it saves Cook's job, but, you know, it's a goal for Pigger. And who knows, we go on and maybe win two or three. It's quite small margins, isn't it? But yeah, yesterday again, you know, 0-0 was. And to be honest, that's one of the reasons I didn't go down. I could just see it, you know. I could see it being the Oldham game all over again. You know, you hope, you think, well, we got the early goal against Oldham, and that didn't pan out. But you know, you hope for another Doncaster, which, looking at the side he put out, to be fair, he was fairly true to his word. He did put out a strong side. That side was certainly good enough to beat Barrow, and should have beat Barrow quite comfortably. But again, as the guy said, seemingly first half stuck with Bon up front, incredibly isolated. But from what I can gather, it certainly did seem better. I was listening to Luke Hyam and that on the commentary, and it did sound better second half. But yeah, just pretty surprised.
Yeah, right. Let's move on to the actual sacking then, because I agree with Ollie. I think the Barrow game's a moot point. I think Joe is most probably right when he says wheels are in motion. When I see our friends at the EADT putting out tweets that look very, very surprised, and the journalists don't know, then I'm thinking, okay, well, this one's, this one's a bit of a surprise. Right, can I just either get your three guys' agreement or disagreement on what and where we were and what Paul Cook was when he arrived? Because my assessment when Paul Cook arrived in March is that he was over and above a good enough manager for us. I thought after the job he did at Wigan, he would possibly get a parachute team or a good championship team, you know, one that was maybe trending upwards but without parachute payments. And I thought we were lucky to have him. Craig, do you agree or disagree with that on Paul Cook in March?
Yeah, I think so. I think not knowing what we know now, I think, you know, fair play to Evans. He was probably the best man that Evans could have got, certainly stature-wise, and probably a much more ideal fit for an Evans-type structure. Well, I'm going to use the word structure very, very loosely here, but for an Evans-type structure of a football club than the one that he actually found himself in 2 months and then 6 months down the line.
And Joe, for Evans, I suppose, importantly, he was available, wasn't he? There was no compensation or anything, you know, to be negotiated there. He's available. And yeah.
Just while you were talking, Dave, do you agree with my assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Joe?
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, I saw your pod earlier. I did watch your pod, your blog earlier on. And I think you said someone like a Sheffield United, and probably, yeah, his stock was that high.
Not the first manager, but after the first year.
Joe? Yeah, maybe I didn't think he'd get a job that high, but it certainly was a real coup to get him to drop down to League One after the job he'd done with Wigan in the Championship, which was an unbelievable job, getting them there and keeping them there. And sort of they were dead and buried, weren't they, really? And sort of when they had that points deduction, I know that was sort of up in the air, but the run that they went on sort of post-Christmas was brilliant. And like for me, I think there was sort of Cook was available and Danny Cowley was available, and for me they were very much 1A and 1B, but they were a long way ahead of anyone else. Those if I sort of said if we could get either Cowley or Cook, we've done bloody well here, and we got Cook, who probably was the slightly better candidate than the Cowleys. But it was, yeah, like I said, I know everyone, I don't think there was anyone who thought that was a poor appointment. And the first things we were looking at and talking about when he came in was, can we still get to the automatic places? Not can we get to the playoffs? Can we get to the top two was what we were thinking. And I don't know how many points that would have taken, but when you looked at the run of fixtures we had ahead of us, it was pretty much the bottom dwelling teams, the division, the teams that we'd traditionally, since we'd been in League One, been able to swat aside quite easily. So there was real hope of sort of really pushing on and having a go at it, but it just did not happen, did it?
There were some horrible results amongst them, proper beatings as well, wasn't there? Three at Wimbledon, wasn't it? Three at Chillingham, Northampton.
Wow. Can we just, Dave, go back a little bit further? Because Dave is right. I don't want to plug the my championship channel, but I did do a piece on it this morning, and a lot of the feedback I've got has fallen on one particular subject, which I want to get your guys' opinion on, and that is the idea of Cook either not being Game Changers man, being Game Changers man, or whether they've managed to play a very clever hand in that he was kind of their man, but they didn't hire him. So if it didn't go well, they could say he wasn't their man. Craig, what is going on here? The takeover hadn't happened. Game Changer didn't hire Paul Cook. I wasn't in the room. I'm not going to be Billy Big Boots and pretend I know. I don't know. What's your take on this? And is there any chance, like I say, there's been a bit of a clever maneuver here to not, for him not to be their guy in case, and if he's top of the league, he's their guy. And yeah, if he's 11th, he's not their guy. What's your take? Because people are getting very het up about this distinction.
Yeah, but first and foremost, we don't know, do we? However, you wouldn't have, and I know, to be fair, I think they came out at the time and said that, you know, it was Evans's appointment, had very little input from us. But you can't imagine that these guys are going to be spending 30 million quid, you know, signing on the dotted line potentially in 3 or 4 weeks' time after he got appointed, that they didn't have a kind of input into the sort of manager that they wanted to have in place. And having had a pretty disastrous last 4 months of the season with him, they then absolutely backed him to the hilt, didn't they? They just gave him complete carte blanche to rip the squad to pieces and open checkbook to go and buy who the hell you want. So I say, yeah, C in your three options, I would have thought, is that they had a get out clause, should we say, in that if it hadn't and it didn't work out, then they could get rid of him with
What's your opinion, Joe, on whose man is Cook?
Well, Cook was Evans's man. Evans appointed him. Like I say, but as we said, he was a standout candidate for the job at the time. So if Game Changer were appointing a manager, Paul Cook would have been very high on that list. But I think, and this is where I do have a fair bit of sympathy for Paul Cook, is that he came into a job, as sort of Craig mentioned earlier, under Marcus Evans, where you are the man, you run the club, you do what you want, you hire who you want, you get your staff who you want, you do your fitness who you want. And it's quite an old school way to run a club. It's almost sort of a very dated model. And he's come in to that side of the job, and now he's working under Mark Ashton, Andy Rowles, Gary Probert, who are all very senior football people ahead of him. And he's from the sort of stuff we're hearing, he's being told when players are in the red zone and they shouldn't be playing and things like that, which I don't personally think is the wrong way to go, but it's a very different job to the one that he signed up for. So
yeah,
he's almost been sold a dud. And like James Norwood, his comments on Twitter were quite revealing, weren't they?
What were they, Joe? Can you just...
He basically said, me and the gaffer are fine. I've got great respect for him. We had a good relationship. So that indicates that it's the powers that be above the manager that were making James Norwood unavailable for selection. So sort of Cook's come into a club expecting to be the man, and he's now not the man. He's just a man in the club. And it's a very different role. And like I say, would he have signed up for that? Were his hands tied to an extent? How many of the signings? Obviously, some of the signings were his. When you talk about sort of Sam Morsi, Christian Walton, Lee Evans, very obviously Paul Cook signings. But when you talk about Rakeem Harper, Kyle Edwards, former West Brom players, where Mike O'Leary were involved, even Wes Burns, possibly a former Bristol City connection there, who was signing who? Because Rakeem Harper's one now that there's just no role for him in a Paul Cook team. And he's a sort of signing. Was Scott Fraser a signing that Paul Cook wanted, or was he a signing that Mark Ashton wanted because there was a good deal to be done? So it seemed like things had got a little bit muddled in the football club. And I think there's probably an element of relief maybe for Paul Cook that he's out of it now. I don't think he'll obviously be disappointed that he hasn't done what he came here to do and that he's lost his job. But I think if the relationship had gone like that this quickly, that it's maybe not the worst thing for him to get out of it, because he I don't know. I felt for a little while that it's almost like a Paul Cook was the gun for hire to get us that League One into the Championship. And once we got into the Championship, I'd imagine we'd have just parted company with him relatively quickly up there, because they want to establish this football structure and get a head coach, you'd imagine, in rather than a manager and someone to work in the structure. So I think maybe Cook would have been sold a pup a little bit, maybe, but obviously he didn't know what was going on. But and I don't think he had a clue that was what was going on when the takeover happened, from sort of what I hear from sort of people who would know.
Well, no, there'd have been non-disclosure agreements and all sorts, wouldn't there?
Well, before you have your say on the whose guy is Paul Cook, the only pushback I'd have slightly on what Joe said is there was just these odd little bit of wink, wink, nudge, nudge in some of Paul Cook's post matches before the takeover happened. And I just remember one particular defeat, and forgive me, I can't remember when, he was like, "Don't worry, the fans are going to be really happy with what's been happening." So maybe you're right, Joe, that the exact extent of the structure, but I think he came in with the assurance. And again, I'm speculating. I don't know. I wasn't there. I'm not Paul Cook, all right, before anyone gives me that nonsense on Twitter or whatever. But I think, you know, there were certain assurances he was given. But I do accept your point, Joe, that maybe not quite exactly structured. Dave, sorry. How often do we have a Blue Monday podcast where we shut Dave up for about 8 minutes in a row? There we go. Dave, whose man is Paul Cook?
I think largely I agree with Joe there that he didn't sign up for what the job ultimately became. I mean, I've heard things such as he was brokered that it wasn't going to be a complete full takeover. It was going to be a big investment into the club. But Joe's right in what he says, that, you know, he goes into the club as the club was under Evans, and he's got, okay, he's obviously not got the funds, but he knew the score was at the time. And he's got carte blanche to do everything he wants on the football side. Evans just clearly, well, he didn't want to know, but was very, very hands off as far as that was concerned. Then he's quite rightly said he probably was then promised funds, but what I understand was brokered as not a takeover, but a larger investment. So clearly, it's a completely different role almost to what he signed up for. And again, I tend to agree as well. His stock is still relatively undamaged. I mean, you know, okay, look, 6 more points, a point off the which we could have easily had. He's what, 2 or 3 points off the playoffs, and everyone's probably generally happy, and he's got a bit more time. So I think Craig said last night, you know, slightly sort of disappointing from a sort of fan's point of view. You just don't want to see it. But look, it's big investment coming into the club, and these guys just ain't going to wait along for it to happen. You know, the brief is to get out of League One as soon as possible, and then hopefully consolidate in the Championship, and obviously then make the massive step. So, yeah, frankly, a bit surprised it's happened quite so soon. But, you know, we said before how we waited under Hurst, didn't we? You know, that fateful few weeks where we won at Swansea, and then we went another, what, month, was it, or something like that?
Another three games, but we lost another one.
Another three games, exactly. Well, you know, you look at the two games we've got coming up this week, and then, of course, you're into the slap back into the, you know, packed out Portman Road, 27,000 or whatever, at home to Sunderland. So if you look at it in that way, you can see where the decision was made.
Well,
now,
Dave, I'm sure Joe won't mind me saying, when we went off air the other night, we chatted for a couple more minutes, and I said to Joe, my parting shot was, nah, I think it'll be like Alex Neil at Norwich, and they'll go up until the playoffs. That was the last thing I said to you, Joe, wasn't it? Complete surprise.
I thought a bad result, which obviously kicked off with a bad result yesterday, and then conceivably what could hopefully not, but could be two defeats coming up this week. I thought, and with the Sunderland game coming up, I thought that might be the breaking point.
But I said to Ben, I think we've got to win one of the next two league games, in Charlton or Wigan. I think if we didn't win either of those, I think that would have been it. But obviously, it was further down the line than that already. And I suppose just as Ipswich Town fans, we're conditioned into, I know there was Hurst, but the last few managers have outstayed their welcome by so far, and that's sort of
couldn't get rid of him.
Even back to Jimmy Jill, and I think he was sort of, it was obvious we weren't going to get in the playoffs that season, but Evans waited until that very last second. Roy Keane, he was here too long. Paul Jewell needed to go a lot earlier than he did. Mick McCarthy probably could have gone a season before he did, even more. And then Paul Lambert should have got another year, over a year more than he should have done. So it's almost like by the time a manager is sacked when you're an Ipswich fan, it's that almost the whole fan base is in agreement with it, or they're in agreement that a change is probably needed, even if they think the manager's doing a decent job, like it was with Mick for a lot of people. But just this one, is this a new Ipswich fan, or is this just them getting rid of the supposed gun for hire to replace either with another gun for hire, a Neil Warnock or a Steve Bruce or someone like that? Or is it...
We'll come to that.
Or is it going for a long-term plan?
If only all this investment wasn't sloshing around over New Year 2015. Who knows? Who knows where we would have been?
Craig, you were nodding along there. Do you want to just come in before I pose the next question?
Yeah, well, that's what I said last night, is that, you know, it's not very often that, you know, the owners of a club have less patience than the fans of a club. You know, there wasn't any huge groundswell of, you know, cookout or anything like that. And it's been a fair few managers whereby, you know, me personally, I haven't been bored of either the person just droning on or the football that you're witnessing. You think, crikey, as Dave said, just pull the trigger, man. Just pull the trigger. And we've been waiting and waiting and waiting. It hasn't happened. This time round, it just caught everyone on the hop, didn't it?
Do you think it's all the derogatory DMs the owners have been getting from very irate pensioners in Arizona? Look what's happened to my pension pot.
Oh, dear. Right. I suspect I can get a unanimous answer. I just want to cover the summer recruitment. So putting aside the comments, which I think are reasonable, that Joe made about the specificity of player recruited against the manager you've got, put that to one side. Do we all agree, Craig, that the standard of player brought in was A, far higher than Paul Lambert had? This wasn't Alan Judge and that's the transfer window, or James Norwood and that's the transfer window. So it was A, higher than Paul Lambert had, and B, and believe me, I have to defend myself all the time on bloody YouTube. You think you've got a divine right? No, I don't. I just can see the world as it is and understand that Manchester City have more money than Watford. They have a better squad. Ergo, their expectations will be higher. And if they perform competently, they will be a better football team. I make our squad the best in the division. Call me divine right guy, Ipswich prick, whatever. I don't care. Craig, summer recruitment.
Yeah, well, as Joe said earlier, and as Rich and I were saying last night, it was just a bit muddled, wasn't it? Yes, you can't argue. You know, we're all giddy with the volume of players that were coming in the door, but once things had settled down, and you know, we all got used to Paul Cook's set in stone 4-2-3-1 formation, then you did start to wonder, well, hang on, where's Harper fitting? He starts as a central, defensive midfielder, but he's not a defensive midfielder. He's a number 10 now. Where does Scott Fraser fit into this? He himself said he's a number 8. Well, we don't even play it. We don't play a number 8. So what's he doing here? Wes Burns, to a certain extent, I don't know. But yes, no, you are correct in that we have a squad now that was far better than the one that Lambert had to choose from. You can obviously pick out one or two players here and there that, you know, arguably, but as a whole, it's certainly better. The quality is better. The standard, the depth of the quality is better. But for whatever reason, Paul Cook just wasn't getting a tune out of what was his squad. And you can't have any arguments with it.
We'll come on to strategic and tactical. That's my next question. We'll go to Dave first, and then we'll go to Joe, just to change it up a little bit. Dave, recruitment is the next part of the story. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you'd agree. My boys tell me all the time, my lads, saying, "Dad, I just can't understand it." And it's been used before how he's just not getting a tune out of these players, because they comfortably are the best squad, man for man, in the league, without a doubt. And I think the early recruitment was really exciting, wasn't it? Burns came quite early, you know, liked him. Piggott came quite early on. I think it got towards the end where there was some sort of almost, oh, okay, obviously he was always going to get Morsy. He came just before the transfer window, but suddenly he also signs, you know, Salina suddenly appears. You think, bloody hell, you know.
There's almost the cheese board, Dave. You're already full. You don't need
smorgasbord of players. And, look, man.
Cigar.
We're all really at port.
We're all really at port. You love to see it. Yeah,
we're all.
It's only a wafer thin mint, Dave. Selena.
Just wafer thin. Wafer thin. I think we all were really excited. And yeah, there's no doubt man for man. I think they are the best squad in the division. But for one reason or another, tactically, he was very, how can I put this nicely, rigid, I guess.
We'll come to that, Dave. We'll come to that. Let me keep your recruitment, okay. Yeah.
Wouldn't change. So no,
Dave is frozen saying the word recruitment. Hopefully he'll come back. So I'll go to Joe on recruitment.
Yeah, the recruitment was, well, like I said, we obviously spent a hell of a lot of money. I know we brought in quite a few in fees, but I'd imagine our wage bill is considerably larger than it was this time last year. And like I say, no manager in our history has had the opportunity to go out and, apart from maybe Jim McGilton in that first, when the Evans investment first came in, has had the opportunity, like in a, well, it was a depressed market, and we were the money team. There was barely, I think there was only something like 36 transfers in the championship for a fee.
Stop
and
it.
We had
34 of them.
Well, like I said, we signed seven or eight players for a fee, and like I said, we were the big spenders. We got the targets, and there's been a lot of talk lately about, oh, this is a two-season project with Cook, and I never ever thought it would be. Look at what happened on transfer deadline.
Hold your fire on that one. That's question number six, Joe.
Okay, but recruitment wise, Bertrand Selina, Sam Morsey, and Christian Walton signed on transfer deadline day. What's the size of that investment over the 3 years of Sam Morsey's contract on X thousand pounds a week, which is more than 10, no doubt? Selina and Walton as an investment. We've made a big investment, and the investment was there to get us up this year.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right, you all seem itching to talk about strategic, tactical matters. So, from, and hopefully I'm not paraphrasing, and what was that Channel 4 journalist? So You're Saying, whatever her name was. So You're Saying that we had a very highly qualified manager, a very highly qualified squad. Now, I saw Wigan beat Hull 8-1 and play a 4-2-3-1, and the fullbacks bombed forward. I'll quote Jim McGilton and Alan Lee when they're talking about Joe Royal and people like that. Pass forward, run forward, quick on transition, wide forwards, narrow, powerful number 10, goals, 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 attack, attack, attack. And obviously we know some of the players, Reece James, Robinson, Kipre, Dunkley, Morsey, Jacobs, Kiefer Moore, Jamal Lowe, Cal Naismith, Kieran Dowell, et cetera, et cetera. Craig, surely this was manna from heaven with this squad, wasn't it? What went wrong to mean that didn't work? And I suppose this is the key distinction by game, what are we up to? Game 20. By game 20. Or 21, possibly, of League One, tactically, Craig?
Well, you can probably draw your own conclusions, but given Cook, as Dave said, very rigid in his use of 4-2-3-1, and not just this season, but previous seasons, previous clubs, previous promotions, he's very good at doing it. But to my eyes, well, why didn't we ever really play it particularly well ourselves? You know, what is the missing ingredient here? Well, you'll probably find out next Saturday what the missing ingredient potentially is. You know, we can all guess, can't we? But it just seems to be that the one missing ingredient from all of it was his assistant manager and, you know, the coaching staff that he brought in, all brought in good faith. And we don't know, you know, they've all, as I said last night, I know people at the club. We all know people at the club, and they've got nothing but good things to say about these guys. You know, they're very personable, approachable, you know, nice people, et cetera, et cetera. But we just didn't look like we didn't look a particularly well drilled, coached team and outfit, given this is the one formation that we are going to play regardless. Yeah. And I say, and it's the one formation that Paul Cook has played regardless for years and years and years and years. We didn't always look like we could play it. And I appreciate some of that's down to you know, the lack of personnel to fit into certain places in the team, i.e. fullbacks. But if that's the case, you've just signed 19, 20 players in the summer. Why don't you make sure that you've got enough cover to allow you to play this one formation that you're going to play regardless. Now, you don't end up having, you know, regardless of how well they've played, you don't have Dinesian playing right back. You don't have Bailey Clements playing left back because they're not, albeit they are left back and right back, they're not the kind of left back and right back that Paul Cook likes in his team. It, the whole
Rhys James.
The whole
I was going to say, did he not assist seven of those goals?
Yeah, but the whole system will fall down if then if they're not there, which is proven to be. And that sort of goes back to what I was saying about this 4-4-2 thing. Well, if you think Paul Cook and his men are trying to drill these guys in something he knows like the back of his hand, and it's not working.
But Craig, can I challenge you on something, Craig?
Yeah.
When you say that, I'm just like, and that's a bad thing. Is this just the wrong circumstance to be doing this absolutist philosophy, not going to change thing? Is it down to what Joe was saying, that A, you're in League One, and B, you've probably got one season? So perhaps we're going to play 4-2-3-1. By the end of the season, I want you to do this, but we're going to start like this. Do you see what I'm saying, Craig?
Yeah, possibly. I'd say I'm just confused by the fact that having, you know, nailed his colours to the mast with this formation for his entire career, that we weren't particularly good at playing it. And, you know, he's brought in players who are used to playing it for a Paul Cook team as well. You know, it's not as if they're all complete strangers. Yeah. You know, he's got the sort of core of the team should be used to playing it in any case. Just wasn't getting a tune out of him for whatever reason.
It's almost like that Bolton game just totally spooked him, isn't it? And that Kane Vincent Young was just getting dragged about because the midfield balance was totally wrong at that point, where it was Harper and Evans in there, and they just weren't doing their jobs really. And Kane Vincent Young had a poor game, admittedly. He was lucky not to be sent off, giving away the penalty and pulling someone down. But we never saw Kane Vincent Young play right back when we had Sam Morsy in the team defensively. And
if you remember that you, I, and Dave stood at Burton and watched poor old Vincent Young just be left completely stranded by himself while Harper was the guy who was supposedly next to him.
Well, what about Wickham?
Didn't do it for 90 minutes, did he?
Yeah.
And Wickham was the only game he played, wasn't it?
Vincent Young were there together at Wickham.
The only game
outstanding. And he was outstanding at Wickham.
They both were.
Dinesian had played well and earned a spot in the team, but ultimately he's the wrong sort of player for that role. And Matt Penny, again, he was doing okay. I wouldn't say he was a standout star or anything like that, but he'd made that error at Plymouth, and it's just like he was bombed out after that. And it's like Paul Cook just lost the bravery to play with the players going forward that we needed. And so rather than being sort of a 4-2-3-1, which saw the square, which he famously said about at the start of the season, with the fullbacks forward and almost like 5-6 attackers, we became a flattish back four with two in front of them, and just the four in front, who are very good players, just hoping that those four were able to create something. And so rather than having 5 or 6 attackers, we ended up with four, and you just outnumbered. And it was only, I say, you look at the Crewe game and we scored two goals. One was a fantastic bit of play from Sonny Aluko down the side where he beat three men in the area. And the other one was Bursant Selina scoring probably one of the best goals we've seen at Portman Road. And they were the goals that got us past the bottom team in the table. And I know there were a couple of chances when the game opened up, but we just, since, I know we're still the top scorers in the league, and it's almost a little bit, if you take this out and take that out. But we scored 14 goals across 3 games. And outside of that, it's like 20 goals in 16 games.
Sorry, Joe, someone will say it on Twitter. MK Dons are the top scorers in the league.
I said we were the top scorers.
I know they are.
But even with that, you take out those 14 goals in 3 games, and it's 20 goals in 16 games. It's not a huge amount. We're not scoring 2 every week. We're scoring a couple of 4s or 6, and then 1 most weeks, or 0. Mm.
Dave, do you want to come in just tactically? Can you elucidate a bit on those 3 games Joe mentioned? Wickham, Doncaster and Pompey. That was the upside, yeah?
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? I mean, Doncaster were fairly terrible, weren't they? We scored 2 goals in the first half, I think, then absolutely blew them away. Second half, pretty much, I think, everything we hit went in from memory. Selina sort of ran amok a bit. I think, do you know what? I think he's been a bit unfortunate with Coulson, because I think with Coulson and a fully fit and flying Vincent Young, he probably had his 2 fullbacks, didn't he? You know, we've been a bit unlucky with the Coulson injury. And what I don't know if you, and again, this is another question that's leading to, what sort of frustrates me, has frustrated me most, I think, about Cook's sort of reign almost, If I don't bump into him over Purvis, you never find out how the injuries are going. Do you know what I mean? So no one's heard about it. Has anyone heard anything when Burns is likely to be back? Coulson's just disappeared since, I think it was Plymouth. He got injured, was it? I think it was Plymouth.
Wickham, wasn't it?
Wickham. Yeah, because Burgess came on. So he's disappeared since Wickham. Burns has disappeared not long after
Oxford,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that sort of frustrated me a little bit. But I do think, now having those fullbacks sort of fit and flying with Morsey in the team would make a hell of a difference, I think, because the little we've seen of Coulson, he's certainly an upgrade on, certainly, no disrespect to Bailey Clements, who's young and inexperienced. I think he's certainly an upgrade on Matt Penny, who I thought did quite well until the Plymouth game. And then obviously his conference got a knock and he was bull and really hasn't featured much since. So he's been a bit unfortunate in that respect, I think.
But I think tactically, and it sort of probably goes back to Craig's point a little bit, it was the in-game coaching for me that we seem to really struggle with.
Can I just come in on that really quickly, Joe? I'll come back to you, I promise. The Wickham game, and I'll talk to Craig about it, I thought we were brilliant. But the best tactical moment of the Wickham game
was Coulson
getting injured.
Burgess coming in to defend,
to be an extra big guy.
Yeah, and that wouldn't have happened. Coulson hadn't picked up the injury, that would never have happened.
Joe, we'll come back to you, I promise. Go on, Craig, go on.
Yeah, but what that allowed to say, and just going back to Wickham and to Portsmouth, what was noticeable with those two games was our right back, whether it be Danasian at Portsmouth or Vincent Young against Wickham, they were both getting forward and
rampant.
Danasian created two goals, didn't he, over at Portsmouth? Yep. Chaplin won, for example. And Vincent Young was in the box and taking people on at the Wickham game. So it just goes to show that if the players are playing in a certain way, it can work.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Sorry, yep. Joe, finish your thought in-game.
Well, when you look back at that Wigan game, that was our 8th away game in the league this season. And in the previous 7, we'd scored the first goal in 7 of those games. And we'd lost 4 of them. Yeah. So we'd scored the first goal in 7 away games. 1-2, which was obviously Lincoln and Portsmouth. Drawn at Cambridge, and we'd gone 1-0 up and lost at Burton, Cheltenham, Accrington.
Accrington.
And there's one more as well in there, I think. But and it did seem like every second half, we seemed to get worse. There weren't many games when we improved. The Doncaster game is probably the only one we did. And even when we were 2-0 up at the start of that second half, there was a period of play where Doncaster was starting to get back into that game a little bit. And Cook, to his credit, tweaked things about a bit. And then we obviously turned on the style, really, and won 6-0 against them. But that was... It was, I don't know, every game the other team seemed to change it. We didn't seem to be able to react. And I heard Craig was saying on the stream yesterday that he sort of sat behind Cook and your you're seeing that he doesn't get any help and support from his bench. And I don't know if that's how he was at Wigan. He might have been like that at Wigan. We don't know on that. Or Richardson might have been a bit more important than we realised. But you can't keep giving away leads. And when you're doing it against Arsenal under 21s and you're 2-0 up and you're absolutely cruising, and then you end up conceding two really good chances and then two goals straight after, and you just think, what is going on? And there was sort of the comment after the Cambridge game saying, I'll never shut up shop. And it's like, well, you need to find a way to shut up shop. Without, you don't have to go 11 men behind the ball, but you've got to, when the momentum of the game is going against you, you need to be able to turn that tide somehow, whether it's just an injury to slow the game down, just sort of getting people sort of recovered and getting people back focused again. But we just, as soon as we came under any pressure, we conceded goals. And that's been from the first game of the season through to the last.
That was a feature, and I'm going back a bit here, that was always a feature under McCarthy. When we went one up, especially at home, we were really difficult to, you know, we really made it difficult. And okay, some of us used to get deep. I guess that helps that you had someone like Christophe Berra playing at the back, something like that. But we used to be really solid, really, really solid. And he just didn't get that under Cook. He just didn't get that at all. And, you know, even you quite rightly said, Crewe should have made it 2-2. Should have been a 2-2 game last week, probably.
Another one.
Oh, absolutely, though. Should have been, shouldn't it? Absolutely. You know, someone made a couple of heroic clearances. Okay, Bond missed a couple of sitters, but one right at the death. But that could easily drop 2 points last week as well.
Cook used to say himself, didn't he? Sorry, Ben. Cook used to say himself that, you know, we have to work so bloody hard to get our goals, yet the opposition can, as Dave said, just pretty much, as soon as there's a little bit of pressure, they seem to score. Whereas we're working our backsides off trying to,
score the upper end. That, and Craig, that goes nicely round in a circle to my observation that I put to you. Do you start, not full McCarthy, but do you start with the basis of, you know, there's going to be times we need to be difficult to beat this season. It's League One. You come up against Accrington, Cambridge, Morecambe, Cheltenham, and I'm not patronising them. They're good. If you don't turn up, they'll beat you. Do you know what I mean? So,
just to butt in quickly there as well. You look at his Wigan side. How many goals did they concede? 29 goals in a season, 46 games. We've nearly conceded. Well, have we conceded that?
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah,
what league was that, Joe? When they went
League
up?
One. When they won League One, they conceded 29 goals.
Yeah.
And then you look at how many goals Wigan have conceded this season.
And I can see where this is going. You're advocating Tony Pulis, aren't you?
Well, Mike O'Leary, West Brom, anybody? I don't know. Does that paths cross? I don't know. Right, this is a bit of a silly one, but give me an answer anyway, Craig. Say Paul Cook is left there with this squad. Joe's mentioned a 2-year project, a 3-year project. At what point are Ipswich scoring 1.7, 1.8, 2 points per game, Craig?
Bloody hell. Well, given we'd never put more than two, only on one occasion, didn't it? We won two league games on the trot. Then, you know, things weren't really on an upward trend. I know the East Anglian guys were saying that they obviously, as you said, Ben, they didn't have any inkling that was happening. But from what they could tell, it's just all about trends, and that the current trend wasn't going upwards. I'm sure he will argue, and his supporters will argue that, give him a bit more time, and as Joe said about Wigan in the new year, when they went on that run, maybe from January onwards, it'd have got more of a tune out of the team. But you just never really got it from game to game, from week to week, from month to month. There was any real tangible improvement. You know, you were getting
that one run, Craig.
Post the Bolton game, we sort of had 20 points in 10 games.
Yeah, we were averaging two, weren't we?
Yeah.
But in terms of like in the game, you were saying, you know, a glimpse of it for two or three minutes in one game, every two or three games, which a glimpse of thinking, crawl, righty, if they click, you know, we'll be scoring hatfuls of goals, we'll be on a roll. But you just never really got the
feeling
that it was ever going to happen.
Do you know what? I always still harp back to Harry from Bath about partnerships in the team and stuff. And you really haven't, other than probably some of the home games, and the away game, Dinassian and Burns, probably. would you say now, say Edmondson and NCR? I mean, a lot of people would laugh at that. Edmondson.
But is that just because they've played a few games together?
But it's because they've played a few games together. But other than that, you know, Morsi's had so many different midfield partners in there. Harper, it was El Mizuni yesterday. Fraser was a game the other game last week. There's just been no development of any partnerships in the team, hasn't
Well, like Bond and Chapman seemed to be developing a partnership, and then that was sort of
taken apart.
But the thing that I'd say is that you look at the sort of the way we've played. I didn't see that run of wins coming in any way. It just felt that we just didn't seem to have whatever it was. And I wonder how, like me and Ben on Thursday stream, we mentioned the comments that he made after the Arsenal game about more individual errors, and the only way we're going to change that is to change the individuals. And I think maybe the second that came out of his mouth, he might have regretted saying that, because if you're Mark Ashton and you've delivered this squad for Paul Cook, which is full of quality and full of expensive players as well, and when Ipswich signed a player in League One on a 3-year contract, Cameron Burgess, for £750,000, if he's seen as a player that's making too many mistakes, just, I'm not saying he is, just using him as an example, well, you can't shift him, we can't sell him, because he's not. Because where's he going to go? Who's going to take that 3-year contract on? So Cook's saying he needs to change all the individuals again. Maybe that's a comment that has sort of led to this. We'll never know, but I can't imagine that went down at all well. When you look at the squad we've got, and you look around the league, and you look at what we're spending, saying that we need to change the individuals again after we've just done that in the summer.
And to Craig's point about depth as well, like look at Wigan's first team. Yes. Is really good, but then look at the depth behind it, and ours is way
No one's close.
Dave,
do
you want to come in?
No one's close to the depth of squad that we've got. Not even close.
Do you think it's maybe too much depth? Is it confusing?
Probably,
especially in that three behind the striker.
Yeah.
But then does it come back to what you're saying about Salina being, you know, signed because he was available and because we could get it done? It got done, and now all of a sudden, you know, you've got him, you've got Chaplin, but then you've got Harper.
You're right. It's the same with Luko when he was available after we signed Louis Barry, and we just grabbed him. He's been a really good signing, but
he's been really good.
It makes it difficult picking a team when you've got so many players.
I'm glad you said that. It was bloody hard work convincing a Reading fan of that earlier. He wouldn't have it. Guys, I've got three more for you, I promise. So the one perk of me doing a video about this as opposed to Blue Monday as well is I've got lots of outsiders' view. And however reductive, Dave, the outsider view is, and I've had plenty of, that's crazy. He should have been given more time. What is your reaction to that? Because remember the outside, and perception is often reality. Remember the outsider point of view when McCarthy left, and I got very upset about this, was I thought way out of kilter with what actually was going on. What is your reaction to the idea that people from the outside think this is madness?
Well, I think they just look at it and see it is. I mean, he's been there 9 months, but again, they haven't seen their football week in, week out. You know, what it's regressed to, especially recently. You know, a lot of sideways passing, a lot of a lot of possession, but in our own, you know, in our own half, not in the you know, area of the pitch which hurts opposition. And a bit like, and I guess that goes back to a bit like your point about McCarthy, where, you know, I'm not saying that football's been terrible, it hasn't, because as Joe said, you know, you haven't seen goals like Salina scored at Portman Road for years and years. But I think from an outsider looking in, Christ, you know, it's 20 games in the season, for God's sake. You would think that. I think what I would think it about any other club, really. But it's the weight of the investment. It's the weight of the investment in the club. And that's what perhaps people from the outside just don't really appreciate. It's the weight of investment. And to go back to what we said, the sort of inflexibility of the tactics, really, I think, more than anything.
Joe?
Yeah, I read a good post earlier on the forum. It's basically a guy saying, if, like, we're a massive club in this league, and that shouldn't be forgotten about. And if Sunderland or Sheffield Wednesday were 11th in the league and sacked their manager, would we be said, oh, that's crazy, what on earth are they doing? We should have expectations like that. And I say Sunderland sacked Jack Ross when he was sixth, and Phil Parkinson wasn't far off the playoffs when they sacked him. You've got to get out of this league straight away. And I don't really care if we become a sacking club, if that makes sense, because I'm a little bit of the opinion, I think Rich mentioned on the pod last night, that in this league, you just need to cycle through a few managers until you find one that works, as opposed to giving people time. If they're not doing a good job, and Paul Cook wasn't doing a good job, he didn't do a good job last season, he wasn't doing a good job this season, then you make the change and try and give yourself a better chance of going up this season.
Greg?
Yeah, and I think also, I know there's been some, who'd have thought, some like furore on social media and on TWTD about, you know, the fans and that. I didn't really pick up on any noticeable Cook out.
You heard from any Bristol City fans yet, Craig? My video has been up 3 minutes before I heard from
Bristol City. Yeah, all over it.
But what I'm saying is that this
and
decision,
then a Norwich fan straight after. Sorry, Craig, go on.
Now, I say this decision isn't being made on the back of any fan thoughts or what our opinion is. It's being done purely on points, yep, progress, you know, the trend that they're seeing, as Joe says, the investment they've made. It's just simply from their perspective, the owner's perspective, Ashton's perspective. Ashton's head's on the block here as well, don't forget. Now, they've put their trust in him to get their return on the investment. So this is by no way, these guys aren't scaring TWTD and thinking, oh, crikey, old matey, there's...
We're going to come to that. Don't worry. I'm not letting that one go today.
Ben, were the guys who questioned at Portsmouth fans by any chance?
No, it was definitely Bristol City. But there we go. Right,
who said we were mad? Who said we were mad?
Quite honestly, my view of the general outside perception, it was, I would say, people who were invested in League One but not necessarily Ipswich fans, probably 30-40%, Dave, think it's they're in the and I know it's basic. I know sometimes the only information they have is the league table,
of course,
and the length of time
Cook
has been in job.
Yeah,
yeah. And the list of potential replacements.
Well, yeah. And Joe, the fact he was good at Chesterfield, Pompey and Wigan.
Cool.
And he's a sympathetic figure because of the administration at Wigan as well. Sorry, go on, Craig.
No, but I'm sure if you took a straw poll of Ipswich fans, I don't know, it might be 50-50 in terms of...
No, fair comment.
You know, I mean, we've met him, as a guy... We've met him. Joe's met him, spoken to him.
Oh, he's magnetic. Yeah,
great guy, lovely guy.
Yeah, and that was what I led off with earlier. Was disappointment it hadn't worked. Right, I've got a question. We'll go to Craig first. Joe's already mentioned the idea that Game Changer is wedded to promotion in 1 year. Is that, Craig, perhaps the biggest factor in the sacking? And talk to me about the consequences, because a lot of people are very keen to tell me that without knowing what Ipswich's accounts are, which will be published in 18 months' time from now, Ipswich are going to be in FFP trouble, without knowing what the sponsorship from Ed Sheeran is as well, and also knowing that it's a very different system in the Championship than it is in League One, and you're almost better off spending in League One. But with all of those things conflated, Craig, talk to me about a one-year plan and FFP.
Well, as Joe said, about the sheer weight of investment we made in the summer, anyone who doesn't think this, I said last night, the project, let's use the horrible word project, isn't getting out of League One into the Championship. That's
project,
not the project
management.
That's the given. Yeah, we're getting out of League One. That's the aperitif for the main course. So the project is stabilizing yourself in the Championship to go to the league above, isn't it? So what would be interesting now, and Nick Ames posted on TWTD, you know, and I always read what he has to say because he's, you know,
oh, he's good, yeah,
less reactionary kind of guys on there. And he was saying, yeah, you basically, and we'll talk about this in a sec, but in terms of who you appoint next, do you go for that gun for hire, as we say, that Paul Cook necessarily may have been, just to try and get you into those playoffs to give you a shot at getting promotion? Or are we almost at the point whereby we're already having to write off this season in December to give a guy a chance to build into next season? Issue being there is, what happens in the summer with the guys who've signed up? You know, Edmondson hasn't signed up to come and play League One for two seasons, has he?
Great signing clause.
Chaplin, yeah. Walton will be going back. Selina's going to be going back, etc. You can reel off the guys who are here on loan.
Brilliant. Joe, yeah. FFP, one-year plan.
Well, you can't fail FFP in League One, can you? Because it's about salary management, and the EFL won't let you register a player whose wages will take you outside the calculation. That's the whole point of it, and it's a live accounting tracker. So no, we won't fail FFP. It's impossible to, and we're obviously within the limits, or the owners are putting in more money. That's the simple bits of it. 1 year plan. Yeah, well, we'll know what game changer want by the appointment they make. If it's Neil Warnock on a short-term deal, then they're looking to get promoted this season. If it's Liam Manning on a three-year deal, then they're probably saying you need to get us up next season. And if you can get us up this year, have £1 million bonus. But if you can't, you've got to show forward progress. You've got to get things going in the right direction so that we're in a position to challenge for the title next season, not to get into the playoffs. We need to be setting ourselves up for a title challenge in 2022-23 if we can't do enough this season.
Dave, what's your thoughts on what Craig and Joe have said?
Absolutely agree with Joe there. I think that would certainly be the way I would go.
Not Craig.
But Joe said just then, you know, get in a gun for hire, get us up there, get us in the playoffs this year, who knows? And then that gives, I personally like what Manning's, you know, well, we said, look, who are the highest goal scorers now in division is MK Dons, isn't it? You know, I quite like the idea of Manning and Hogg, and by that time they'd have had a full season at MK. That's providing they don't get in the playoffs and get up, who knows? But yeah, I kind of like that. I would go with that personally. Just have a shot at it.
Let's talk names then, because I think the whole thing of it taking us all by surprise is that we've not really considered it, have we? No. And that everyone jumps quickly and all the betting websites will get something up because they know Ipswich is a good market and people will gamble on it. But
you probably affected the odds, you know, exponentially as well. You know, you putting your £2.50 on Liam Manning probably halved his odds. The amount
of money
that
down from 12 to 8 to 1.
Opinion maker. But so I've not got my head around this. I'd actually push back on this idea of Paul Cook being a gun for hire as well. We've described him as a long-term philosophy guy. When you compare him to a man manager who players love, and obviously I'm not mentioning this name, but the name Neil Warnock has been mentioned. That's the guy that has players eaten out of his hands, and all he needs is good players, and he'll get them up. But yeah, Craig, talk to me about some names. And anybody listening to this, this happened one day ago and we've not had a long time to think about this.
Oh, crikey, come to me first. Well, actually, just referring again to TWTD, there was a really good post on there and I can't think who. I think it was Wacko.
Or maybe I who came Joe.
We're going to talk about TWTD and the camera's going on Joe full screen in a minute. So don't worry about that.
Yeah. Certainly wasn't that bloke, crikey. But he had a list of
inflammatory.
Twisted fire starter.
Sorry, Craig. Go on. Sorry. Go on, Craig.
No, I was going to say that it depends where we're going. I was saying about Nick Ames earlier. He had basically three categories of manager. It was either we're calling him the gunfire promotion specialist, Neil Warnock. It's your under 23. Coach, head coach, Liam Manning. No, I appreciate I'm downgrading Liam Manning a little bit there, but that age manager, or it's your Appleton, a manager who's sort of maybe straddles both camps.
Yeah.
And I say, I think it was Wacko had this post where he had, you know, the guy who used to be Man City's head coach is now at New York City. The chap who. Two Chelsea guys who are at Chelsea. Yeah, exactly. Anthony Barry, who was with Paul Cook at Wigan, is now at Chelsea and obviously knows two or three of our guys. The Chesterfield manager who came.
He's from Ipswich.
Sudbury, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
yeah. James Rowe, exactly.
Plus Manning himself, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know. I'm intrigued. And as you said, Ben, you'll know from our next appointment what the strategy is for the next 6 months, won't you? Yeah. I just wonder whether, having seen how, for example, Blackpool did in getting Critchley and dragging him from Liverpool under 23s, whether it is something that they'll do and he'll fit into the structure that they've got.
Joe?
I do think the interesting sort of appointment last week that we spoke about is the John McGrill appointment, who's been brought into the club by Mark Ashton, not by Paul Cook, because Paul Cook wasn't going to be making appointments like that when he was 2 days away from the sack, was he? So that's a Mark Ashton appointment, and John McGrill is an EFL manager. He's had a short spell at Swindon where he didn't manage a game, but he is a League Two manager, ex-Ipswich connections, used to working in the structure as a head coach like they have at Colchester. And I'm not saying he's the answer, but you can't rule him out. He's gonna have a chance at this job without a doubt. He's gonna be the caretaker manager, isn't he? Ahead of the Tuesday game and potentially into the Saturday game, depending on how.
What's the deal with Kieran Dyer, Joe? Is he?
He's still the under-23s manager, but I don't think he'll be being considered for the job at the moment. From what I understand,
will he be on the bench though?
I don't know on that, for that matter, but
they've got to find imagine, something to fill up the bench, haven't they?
Well, you'd imagine Cook's guys are going to be gone as well. Someone posted on the message board that John Keighley, the goalkeeper coach, will be staying on for a bit longer until the new manager's in, but...
Because they all... Yeah, there's a few going to go, isn't there? Bloody hell.
Continue if you...
Like I say, Andy Warren put a list together and it's sort of the League One managers, Ryan Lowe at Plymouth, who was sort of battering his eyelids at the Sheffield Wednesday press conference when he was talking about there. I think he'd quite like that job. Is he maybe ready to move on to a bigger club? You've got Carl Robinson even at Oxford. Michael Appleton at Lincoln, who was, I think a few weeks ago, people have said he's a shoe-in if he goes, but I don't know. It just seems that he's not to the sort of 18th for Lincoln, aren't they?
And not.
There was even talk about sacking him yesterday. I noticed the D4 Twitter account saying about it, and maybe, I don't know, his stock just doesn't seem to be as high as it ever was previously. So maybe he's going to be considered.
I know Dave's going to say it, but I think they just need to be very careful. Ash needs to be very careful. If he ends up appointing Appleton, I don't think that'll go down particularly well. It's not the most inspiring.
Charismatic, is he?
Yeah.
But what about John McGreal as well? I think he's... I know he's got the Ipswich history, but I don't think he's got a managerial CV that you'd think, we've got to go out and get that guy in normal circumstances.
Well, Joe,
but
it just doesn't feel very in keeping with the calibre and the profile of player that's coming. Why would you go... A grade on the players, and then that feels like Manchester United with Solskjaer telling Pogba what to do, and it's okay.
And
David,
I'd like to see. Sorry, I'm still talking. I'd personally like to see a coach on the way up. We've had a lot of managers on the way down, effectively, and I'm not disparaging sort of someone like Paul Cook on that, because he was a manager that we were all excited to get. But how many of our previous managers, probably going back to Jim McGilton, are managers who you think they've got the potential to be a Premier League manager one day?
Well, Keane might have been.
Yeah, Keane, yeah. That's probably
Keane
the one.
He'd done it, hadn't he?
But he was still seen as a young, hot figure in the football management terms when we got him there. But like I say, Paul Jewell, no, safe pair of hands. Mick McCarthy, no, safe pair of hands.
Hurst. He was on the upward trend, obviously.
Very, very slow upward trend, though, wasn't he? He'd had that good season.
Well, it was upward nonetheless, wasn't it?
He spent a lot of time. But I want a manager like these names that Craig mentioned, like a Liam Manning, who is a 35-year-old, highly rated coach that gets the younger generation of footballers, which you have to deal with now. Because, like I say, obviously, you've got your crazy people like Neil Warnock that can seem to get anyone eaten out the palm of their hand because they're just brilliant managers. But it's very different now. These guys are young men. You've got all the social media side of it. You've got it's harder to manage people in this day and age now. The sort of, I don't know, millennials or younger than millennials, zennials or whatever they call them. But it's a very, very different skill man management now.
And cancel him.
But you look at someone like Gareth Southgate, for example, who's very, very, very emotionally intelligent. And we've got a very collegiate sort of set up outside the club. When you look at Mark Ashton and all the people around that, it's very, very collegiate, sort of very, everyone's very well qualified
executives,
big structure. And you need a manager that you don't need an old school manager to go into that. You need a modern, forward thinking manager to go into that.
Manages fits the bill, doesn't he? And you know, Hoggers, I think, was quite well thought of in his time at coaching at the club, and he comes with
David Wright
there as
Lewis
well.
Lewis Price is their goalkeeper.
Fits the bill absolutely perfectly. However, as a sideshow, come on, guys, Neil Warnock in front of 28,000 people marching along the touchline, punching Lee Johnson,
and
having an open bare knuckle fight with Lee Johnson.
Gradually boiling with every decision that goes.
There's a Twitter account, and it's just
be worth it.
Every Saturday, all they do is just post the same thing, which is Neil Warnock shouting, "You've got to effing die for 3 points out there." And every Saturday I see it, it makes me laugh.
I'm totally in. I'm totally in the Liam Manning. You know, hog going to be. Is it going to be too early? I'm totally in that camp. However, I'd just love to see it just for.
And also, actually, funnily enough. the whole Liam Manning thing. You know, Liam Manning took over in.
He hates Lee Johnson. It's brilliant.
This summer, doesn't he?
What's Liam?
Sorry, you could see another Netflix documentary. The Last Dance. Liam Warnock, isn't it?
I just don't know. Warnock.
That subject. And what Warnock might like is the proximity of the dugouts to the fourth official, because basically there is no place, is there? You've got like six inches where the fourth official has to stand between the two technical areas.
He was on TalkSport this week talking about Rafa Benitez, and Brazil asked him about his opinion on Rafa Benitez. He's just a genius. He said, Rafa Benitez once tried to undertake legal proceedings against him, fielding a weakened team, he said. I hope he stays there for another three or four games. He says, gets even more grief. I love it. He's just brilliant.
Maybe it's not like it was, but if football management is about charisma, then get him in. But it's probably not anymore.
Imagine it with Selena B's Abel Tarab, who get all the players together and said, lads, look, absolutely, this guy's going to get you up. Don't worry.
Have some cover behind him, wouldn't
he? I know we spoke about Liam Manning a few times, but that's going to be tough to extract him out of MK Dons. They're a very well-run club.
Yeah. That's a good job, MK Dons. I always end up defending them in our WhatsApp group.
Liam
Sweeting, their sort of director of football, who's a very smart, very switched-on guy. There was a good podcast with him, the Athletics and Tactics podcast, and it was the sort of analyst guy and Ali from the Not the Top 20 podcast talking to him, and he's smart, and he's talking about how they recruited Manning and they sort of focused in on him and went for him, and it's after 20 games or so, it's going to take a very, very good offer for him to walk away from that, especially after we've just sacked a manager who brought in 19 players in the summer and has only been given 4 months to work with that squad. The owner's going to have to show that they're going to give him a sort of a long-term job and really sell the vision to him. But I don't know, it'd be fascinating to see, wouldn't it?
Looking at the odds, well, just before I came on here, is Frank Yallop, wasn't it? I mean, that's, I suppose, two and two.
Well, you say Frank Lampard then?
No, it was Frank Yallop.
I know, because I spoke to Walkie at the match on Wednesday, and he's like saying, I've been on the phone to Frank Yallop, telling him he's got to get over and manage us, and he said that Yallop is definitely interested in the job, and obviously has a connection to the owners, but I don't see it happening personally.
No, okay.
Dave just mentioned...
Just a quick one. George Burley only had about 20 games in charge of Colu before he left there and came back home, so you know
he did.
Chris Hogg is obviously George Burley's son-in-law, isn't it?
So yes, he is.
He'll be on the phone.
Yeah,
there it is.
Cole, you still haven't forgiven us for that, have they? Still
haven't forgiven us for that. I'll drop George a text. Don't worry.
There you go.
Dave mentioned TalkSport, and I'm going to go all TalkSport now and put the focus on poor old Joe here, because we never take a position as a podcast, but we do take accusations of bias against our presenters very, very seriously. Now, Joe, you've had a bit of a rough day of it on TWTD, so I'm going to give you a chance to state your case. I'm going to give you a chance to state your case.
Where were you, Joe? Where did it come? Where were you?
Obviously, I was in the Swan when I had to news come through, just before I went to Arcade Tavern and then Maloko.
let me set this up properly. Obviously, none of us are going to stand here and whitewash and defend Joe. Probably quite the opposite. We're all going to bury him like the rest of TWTD has done as well. But so, Joe, you are known to Luke Chambers. I don't think that's a secret in the Ipswich Town fan space, isn't it? And there's been some accusations about your sort of thoughts on Paul Cook being linked to his treatment of Luke Chambers. Now, Luke Chambers yesterday, I'll deal with this so you don't have to, Joe, because it puts you in an awkward position, but not a very well-advised Instagram story or whatever it is, quoting the Demolition Man. Now, Joe, you... you replied, and these are your words. I've got TWTD in front of me here. His career was ended by a nobody who lasted 5 minutes. No wonder he's annoyed. So that was a little bit inflammatory, Joe. I think even you would admit that, wouldn't you? And a poster called Vic has accused you here. And in calling Cook a nobody in this post, you're showing your true colours, Joe. Despite your protestations of trying to keep middle ground, it was so transparent that you really didn't like him. So, Joe, can you answer this criticism that you are anti-Paul Cook because of your relationship with Luke Chambers?
The The funny thing is, I hadn't spoke to Luke from when Paul Cook was appointed. The last time I spoke to him was just before Cook was appointed. And he was saying, look, this is when Lambert was in a job. He's like, oh, bloody hell, look, Paul Cook's out there. We could get him. And so he was obviously looking forward to Paul Cook coming in. And I didn't speak to him again until after he'd been released, effectively. And by this time, I was already getting a huge amount of stick for being anti-Paul Cook throughout that time, because I just didn't think he was doing a very good job last year. I thought he was going to come in and fire us up to the automatic promotion places and backed that with a significant amount of money. So that might have more to do with it, that the fact we dwindled down the table as my cash out for my bet dwindled down to 0 pence. And but for me, and this is the tweet that was quoted back at me for months and months, it was about the way the players were treated. And like Luke Chambers, he divides opinion, and I think personally, captain, played 40 games last year, probably deserved another year's contract, but I wouldn't have seen him as a nailed-on starter. But I wasn't particularly precious about whether he stayed or not in the grand scheme of things. For me, it was the way that when the news story broke from sort of the guys at East Anglia and backed up by the guys at TWTD that Andre Dizel, Flynn Downs, Luke Wolfenden, Miles Kenlock, Jack Lancaster, Teddy Bishop, all being told they can leave. And I just found it, you're just ripping the guts out of the club, it felt like, ripping the heart of the club. These people that have been there since they're 7, 8 years old, that know Ipswich Town Football Club. And like I say, you've got Luke Chambers and Cole Skuse on the other side of that. But I think their careers were coming to an end at that level. So it could, I'm not saying it was a wrong decision to release either of them, especially Skuse, who hadn't been fit all year. But for me, I just didn't like the way we just ripped out the heart of what was Ipswich Town. And people say, well, Flynn Downs wanted to leave, Andre Dizel wanted to leave. Well, I'm sure Connor Chaplin, I'm sure Sam Morsi, I'm sure Kyle Edwards and Christian Walton and Bertrand Selina didn't want to be playing League One football this year, but they had a vision sold to them of what this club could be and where it's going, and were paid accordingly to get them here, to stay here in League One. But Flynn Downs and Andre Dizel, two midfielders who are playing regularly for decent championship sides, and Ipswich boys, they weren't sold that vision. They were told to sling your hook and see you later. Well, I just felt it was the totally wrong approach from Cook. I didn't like the demolition man talk. But then, like I say, we got to the start of this season. I was quite happy to be behind him because I thought we'd built a good squad, but he hasn't been able to get over it. Maybe my patience with him was shorter.
Do you regret
than
calling him a nobody, Joe? That wasn't fair, was it?
I think in the history of Ipswich Town, he's a nobody now.
But in football,
no, he's a very good football manager who has done a brilliant job at three other clubs. And sadly, and I think maybe a part of it were outside of his control, as we spoke about earlier, with regards to the job he signed up for and the job he subsequently ended up with. It just hasn't worked for him, but it hasn't looked like working for him for a long time. I think he probably should have had a bit more criticism for what he did last season. And it was interesting to see Stuart Watson put the sort of the Paul Cook in quotes from sort of like March through out on Friday night. And it's, I was frustrating because he is obviously a good manager. Like he is, you don't achieve what he's achieved in the game without being a good manager. And I say it's my main frustrations. It's sad. It hasn't worked out for him here, because Ipswich Town is who I support. I don't support Luke Chambers and I don't support Paul Cook. I support Ipswich Town, and what's best for Ipswich Town is what I want. And I want us to get up, and I want us to get out of this league. And I didn't like I said, I didn't like what happened last year. I didn't think that was good enough. But we came into this season, League One. We were going to show League One no mercy. And I was getting a bit tired of the excuses quite early in the season with regards to the gelling. But then we did look like we were improving in that spell of 10 games. But as soon as we played a couple of decent teams, the football, it's got boring and it's got apathetic at Portman Road again. The fans, they don't look angry. They look bored, and it's just got there so quickly, which I don't think anyone expected. I think everyone thought it was going to click and it was going to gel, but we're going backwards, and I think a change needs to be made. But I'm not, like I say, I'm not.
There's no implicit bias.
I don't hate Paul Cook. I've met the guy. I've spoke to him, and he seems a really good guy, a really passionate guy. I don't think he treated the players with the respect they deserved, the ones that were being released last year, people that have given a lot of their lives and careers to the football club. And I'm talking as much, if not more, about the academy boys, guys like Teddy Bishop, who've been at the club since they were 8, leaving the club at 25, and basically just getting a 30-second conversation, yeah, you're being released, see you later. And I think he came out and said it was brutal, and how it was handled. And I'm sure if you spoke to the others, I've spoken to, I won't say the relation, a relation of another player, and he said it was the same for his relation who was released, and it was really disappointing. And especially seeing, like I say, all the players. Luke Wolfenden would have gone if we didn't need to keep one academy player for the squad rules, and it was unnecessary. I said at the time it was unnecessary. It still feels unnecessary, but all things considered, we've got a brilliant squad now, and it's just time for somebody to start with this squad, picking it up and getting us flying up the table where we need to be and where we should be.
Well done, Joe. Sorry. For anyone that thinks I just put Joe on the spot, I asked his permission to ask about that. And well done, Joe. You're a class act for answering it. And I will again reiterate, we don't plan what we're going to say here. Everybody who comes on the pod, I don't ask Craig what he's going to say and then vet it. I don't ask what Dave's going to say, Richard, Mikey, et cetera, et cetera. Everyone has their view. So well done, Joe, for debunking that. Hopefully, fingers crossed.
Yes, Ben. Oh, sorry. Yes, Ben, you are absolutely correct.
Go we to outro.
I can't read your writing, mate. We do not. Yes, we are.
Agenda.
I knew you were pissed when you sent it, Joe.
Oh, dearie me. I am contractually obliged to mention, in fact, I'm just going to read the WhatsApp message. It would be good to mention ITFC Women, who turned up in the FA Cup 4-0 win over the Crawley Wasps. Goals from Thomas Egan, own goal, and Barrett. AFC Wimbledon ladies up next in the third round next
That result
weekend.
Must have really stung them.
There you go. He's back, everybody. Dave, last words on Paul Cook.
Speechless.
Read your script, Dave. For God's sake.
I haven't got it. Surprised.
Joe, last words on Paul Cook.
Thanks for all your efforts at the football club. Good luck in your next venture. And just a real shame that it hasn't worked out for him here. Is my main overriding emotion. It's just sad that he's not. But I think it needed to happen. I think the change needed to happen. And whilst I'm surprised at the timing of it, I'm not shocked that it has happened.
Craig, last words on Paul Cook.
Yes, that sadness. I said it last night when Rich asked me, first of all, what's your overriding emotion? It was just sadness that it hasn't worked out, because I've got no ill feelings. I've got no dog in the game or anything like that. I just, seems like a lovely, lovely guy. I'm just sad it hasn't worked out. I just wonder whether he'll look back and just rue that sliding doors moment that Liam Richards and all of a sudden, you know, became bloody Pep Guardiola at Wigan and didn't come along as his assistant. Because I'm pretty sure it was assumed by all parties that come the summer he would be joining us, and you know, we'll never know what would have happened had that happened.
Excellent stuff. So here we are once again on the Blue Monday podcast. We've covered Mick McCarthy going, we've covered Paul Hurst going, we've covered Paul Lambert going, we've now covered Paul Cook going. Who's next? Get your comments in. Thank you, everybody, for joining. Bit of a fiery show between the four of us tonight, but we hope you have enjoyed it. There's been no script. We've only talked about one thing, and we've gone very long, so I'm sure I'll be in lots of trouble on all accounts. But thank you, everybody, for watching, listening, etc., subscribing, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, etc., etc. And we will see you very soon, and we will know more in due course who is going to be the next manager of Ipswich Town. See you soon.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.